freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock here has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk on a... What day is it? These short weeks are weird. Wednesday morning.
Tuesday.
No, it's not true. It's Wednesday. You can't fool me. I'm on this. I'm on top of this sucker. It's a Wednesday morning. Mariners lose last night. Seahawks make a big move. We got a lot to dig into today. Shannon Dreyer joined us a little bit later in the show to talk some Felix Hernandez, who is probably a number one in the crosshairs today. And we'll have open phone lines kind of throughout the day on him and kind of where you think the Mariners should go with Felix and his future and what you'd like to see them do. 8 o'clock, we'll have a good section of time to talk about it. And right now as well, if you want to jump aboard here, 206-421-3776. He was, I'm confused on Felix, honestly, Brock. And there's a bunch of little parts to last night's game. Obviously, an annoying loss. You had a lead. You found a way to blow it. You came back to tie it up, and then you just obviously completely blow it in the ninth with Diaz not having his good stuff. And I think there's some criticism potentially of service and the way he handled the game last night. I think it was his best effort. Thought he tried to get one extra inning out of Felix he didn't need to get. I thought Diaz had been a little overused recently. I don't know that he would have been my guy in the ninth, but you know, it's always hard to really criticize those things because you don't know everything that's going on and who's available and who's not. And
he's pushed so many of the right buttons that inevitably,
right,
when you're a manager, you're like a play caller. You're just not going to be right.
That's exactly right. So I'm not going to sit here and rail about it. I thought it was one of the ones that kind of got away from them a little bit. But I find myself more than anything today just confused by Felix. Is he bad? Like, is Felix now a bad pitcher, or is he actually a good pitcher who has had some tough luck and some bad breaks? Is he capable of giving more than he has?
Yeah,
is he making adjustments to who he now is? I find Felix more than anything a little bit confusing.
Yeah, because he's got a 5.5 ERA.
That's not good.
You know, I mean, and you see everybody else on this pitching staff trending one direction. Right, you see a Mike Leake trending the right way. You see Marco Gonzalez with now 7 starts that have been just fantastic. James Paxton is obviously the ace and the commander in chief of this entire staff. And even Wade LeBlanc comes in and he's a sub-2.5 ERA guy over nearly half dozen starts. And you just, I don't know, you see that trend line going one way for everybody. And the one who is the greatest, who is the ace of the past, who passed Sandy Koufax last night in career strikeouts, is the one whose trend line, unfortunately, is going in a different direction than the rest.
But I don't know that the numbers tell the whole story on Felix either, and I think that's part of the question. It's not just who he is, but where do you go with him overall? Because usually when a player is confusing, I agree with you, Brock, you either look at the numbers or look at his history and try to figure out what those two things tell you. And in this case, I don't know that I like...
Where's the XY axis across?
Exactly.
Macy handed me her homework the other day on the plane. She's like, help me understand this. I'm like, man, that's...
That's beyond
I'm
me.
I'm trying. I'm pretty good at algebra, but let me get my XY chart right. And where does that thing intersect?
At least her homework she gives you is in English. Avery gives me homework in Japanese. I don't understand any of it. She's like, Dad, what do you think I do here? Avery, I don't speak Japanese. I don't know. I can't read it.
And you can't even fake it like your dad used to do, right?
Avery, I don't have a clue. You're going to have to ask Mom. She doesn't read Japanese either, but maybe she can figure it out. I don't think either one really tells the story. I don't think Felix's numbers are the whole picture. Obviously, the numbers this year have been bad.
Giovanni Gallardo bad.
They've been bad. And that really for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I looked at the first dozen starts last year of Giovanni Gallardo. There's a lot of similarities with Ian Felix. Innings pitched, an ERA. Giovanni was over 6. Felix is trending in that direction. I mean, it's just 64 innings for Giovanni over those 12 starts, 66 for Felix. Felix has not gotten through 7 innings of any of these now dozen starts. This isn't 1 or 2 or 5 or 10. It is... We're past Memorial Day.
And yet, we've seen him, Brock, because I agree with you. I mean, the numbers show a pitcher that is Giovanni Gallardo-esque and has been now for 3 years. But when you watch him, there are moments and there are times where you see not the old Felix, but a guy perfectly capable of settling into a groove, which he did once again last night, really from the second through the third through the fifth. So for 3 straight, and really in the first, he was fine. He gave up a little solo home run, whatever. In 4 of his 6 innings last night, and 4 of his first 5, he looked like a good pitcher. Not an ace. I'm not trying to sit here and say he looked like old Felix. But he looked like the guy that you kind of want him to become. Throwing ground balls, working on different counts, finding a couple of strikeouts here and there, using his curveball to throw it effectively for strikes. He got into a groove. And I can't help but watch that guy and say, okay, there's the model, Felix. If you can keep doing that, there's a future success and a new future for you. And then you look at his track record. I mean, his track record and his history is obviously one of the greatest in baseball history. He's been one of the best pitchers we've ever seen. So I'm not just, I find it difficult to sit here and say, okay, throw it all away. Mm-hmm. DFA him, cut Felix, move on, trade him for a nickel on the dollar. You can't do any of those things.
Nope.
Right?
Nope.
Right?
No.
Right? Look, right?
Don't look at me that way.
Right? Like, I don't think you can. I don't think you can. But at some point, if everything in this, and it's not now, but if you were still doing this in July, and everybody else in this pitching staff is doing what they do, and you have the opportunity to go out and make a deal, and in July, Felix still has an ERA over 6, what are you going to do?
Well, you said this 3 minutes ago. We don't have all the information, especially in baseball more than any other sport. I think we can gather quite a bit of information, especially, you know, with burner accounts these days. If you can find the burner account, you can find a lot of information online. With baseball, it's so challenging to really understand the big picture, because here would be the one question that I would want to know. Is Felix less stubborn? Hey, Jerry and Scott, is Felix less stubborn?
Well, we're going to ask Shannon Dreyer about that at 8:30, and she knows Felix about as well and knows this clubhouse.
I mean, I was in
well
El Salvador last week, and you told me last week this is what he said following a start.
Yeah, let me see. This was Felix after his last start, where he was once again not that good, gave up 4 runs early to Oakland. They ended up losing that game. In fact, they lost this game last night. They lost the game before Felix pitched. Those are the last 2 losses they've had. And the one before that was a miraculous comeback that night against Detroit. Otherwise, it would have been the last 3. This was Felix and what he said following his last start.
First inning, that's the problem.
But you find that as it goes on.
Yeah. I mean, after that, I mean, the same stuff that I have, and they don't hit me. If I take all my runs in the first inning, I'll probably be out there with Berlander and ERA.
Yes, that's not true. That was just the problem
with
that statement.
The 12.75 ERA doesn't help in the first
inning. No, it's been bad.
Yeah.
But Verlander's ERA is 1, and Felix's ERA after the first inning is like 4.
Yeah.
Last night, he wasn't any more willing to say he just didn't have it.
Yeah, I feel much better today. I mean, I think that's a good adjustment before the 6th. But I feel really good. Just, I mean, if one of those games, you can't do anything about it.
There's nothing really you could do. I see those are the things that kind of disturb me when you try to figure out, you know, what is his future and is he making adjustments? Is he recognizing what's happening? Is he capable of it?
It's the hardest thing.
Is he capable of that, Brock, or like, has he for so many years worked off confidence? 206-421-3776. If you can grab a quick call this morning. Kyle is in Shoreline. Kyle, what do you do if you're the Mariners on this one?
I don't know. I think you let him finish out the year, or at least the next couple months. But you got to think his shelf life's getting pretty short.
Yeah, I don't think there's any questions about that. A couple years left on his deal. And is he going to just make that transition? Thank you, Kyle. Is he going to? This is a conversation I felt like we've had the last 2 off seasons, have we not? If we went back and played some sound in December and January as we got ourselves ready for the baseball season, hey, you know, and we talked to John Smoltz, and you can talk to any past great pitcher, and so many of them have confidence that that switch is going to be flipped, that, you know, that switch that realizes and gets away from a delusional that you're, you know, what you used to be, and the strikeouts are still king, and you're going to climb up this list, and you're going to be one of the top 20 to 15 strikeout guys in your career, and just flip that switch and go be a pitcher. Go be CC Sabathia. Go be one of these guys that has just really found in late in their career that they can live in the upper 80s with the fastball and still be dominant. Mike, in 12 starts, he's not gotten into a 7th inning in 12 starts this year. And that's just, you know, you say, well, you see glimpses of it, and I see it for a stretch here, and I see it for a stretch there. After a dozen starts, man, you've got to pile a few of those together.
You would think.
You would sure hope so if this team is going to contend in July, August, and September, that you need the guy with the longest track record to make that switch.
He's only got 1 more year left in his deal, right? I mean, it's just 2019, and then they have that team option for 2020 that is looking like it won't be exercised. That's the deal where they got an extra $1 million. You know, they could have him play for $1 million if he lost a year, basically, due to elbow surgery, which hasn't happened. So you've got this year, you know, the rest of this year, and then next year, and that's it.
Yep.
So all you would be eating, really, would be next year's $28 million, which, while not insignificant, is only 1 year. I mean, most teams can kind of survive any crazy contract for 1 year.
I'm just not ready to talk about this.
All right, you don't have to talk about it today, but it's going to come up if you read the text and you read the tweets and you read some of the places people go.
Yeah.
Because I understand what the caller there is saying, Kyle. Yeah, you want to give him the rest of the year and then kind of figure it out in the offseason. But this is a year where you're in it.
Yep.
This is a year where you can't afford a lot of starts where you're not giving your team a chance to win. So I'm not sure they're there yet. And I think for the most part, he has given his team a chance to win.
Yep.
But I'm also not going to shout down the people who are saying he's not, because I kind of understand where they're coming from. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Yeah, tough loss to the Mariners last night. They fall to the Rangers 9-5. Did rally to tie the game at 5-5 in the ninth before Edwin Diaz came on and was not sharp. Gave up four runs for the Texas win. Felix, not really sharp either, surrendered a two-run lead in the sixth. And then James Paxton will try to end this thing tonight. James Paxton against Matt Moore tonight in a battle of lefties. Moving in very different directions. Paxton, of course, has been dominant this year. You may remember Matt Moore when he first came up with Tampa. He was the future of baseball, and now he has an 8 ERA and has been passed around the league. So, good chance for the Mariners to actually take another series tonight.
You know what I loved? I actually loved some of the emotion, the angst, and the anger last night on Twitter. That, you know, it's just been such an unbelievable run. You started yesterday's show with saying, oh, ho-hum, the Mariners won another one. That's just all they do. A 5-4 game winning streak here, 4 game winning streak there, won 9-10. And then the sixth inning got away from them. A couple lapses, some confusion with signals, and a bases loaded, no out situation. Instead of wiggling out of it and finding a way to win, you know, last night was not tremendously sharp. There were some mental errors, there were some physical errors, there were some rough at bats, and the inability for Diaz in that ninth inning looked like a guy that's just gassed a little bit mentally. You know, and not because he had to come into a non-save situation, mentally, because how many one-run outings has he come in time after time after time after time, leading this league with 19 saves? It went the wrong way, and it's good news that Mr. Paxton takes the hill tonight to turn it right around.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Sounds like the Seahawks are expected to sign free agent wide receiver Brandon Marshall to a one-year contract later today. He's 34 years old, played in 5 games for the Giants last year before being injured. I kind of like the idea behind this. I don't think Brandon Marshall is the player he once was, and I'll admit it stood out to me that he has not played in one playoff game in his entire career. That seems a little odd, but I think they need to find a way to replace the big body of Jimmy Graham, and it doesn't look like they're trying to do that as much at tight end, where they went after a little bit more of the blocking style with Dixon and drafting Will Disley, and they're going to need somebody in the red zone. I think that's a reasonable thing for them to try to find for Russell, so I like the idea of bringing in Brandon Marshall and seeing if it'll work. And if it doesn't, I would assume it's not a big-time contract, and you just kind of move on.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to guess a minimum deal with incentives up to $2 million. That's what was reported by Adam Schefter yesterday, and I'm sure those incentives are tied to active roster on the roster on game day and possibly some stats and Pro Bowl and who knows what else. I generally say I like this move. It's a low-risk move. This is a veteran guy. This is exactly what you do. It's no different than how many different moves they made with big receivers. Even Terrell Owens came into a training camp with the Seahawks some years ago. Here's where I guess I'm more challenged today than ever before. This roster has turned, and these young guys need the work. I've told you before, the studies that have been done, Mike, that it takes the players today 3 years to get the amount of work, even 20 years ago in my era, that guys got. Takes 3 years because of the lack of reps, the lack of practice time, the lack of opportunities. That's where I'm challenged on this deal. That's where I want Amara Darbo to take it and run, or Jerron Brown to take it or run, or Marcus Johnson to take it and run, and not necessarily a 34-year-old with a beat-up body.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Another piece of Seahawks news. Camp Chancellor told a Virginia news station he intends to play in 2018. If he's physically able to do so. The quote says, if my body says I can play, I'm playing. If my body says don't play, I'm not playing. Oh, listen, I'm a very good listener. I don't see myself as old. I feel like I'm still in my prime, so it's not an age thing at all. It's just a matter of structural issues in the neck and if they change or not. So essentially, no real news. Sounds like he's still going to get his scan done sometime in the next month, and at that point, he'll have to make a decision as to what he's going to do for his future. I'm sure it's challenging for him. I'm sure for the most part, he feels great physically. He is still in the prime of his career in a lot of ways, but if that neck, much like Cliff Averill's, isn't going to allow him to play safely, he's going to have to make a really difficult choice.
Yeah, I think what this tells us yesterday is that, hey, he's not entirely in the barn, and it matches up with some of the things that we have heard around that Seahawks facility, that they're going to give him the opportunity to rest an entire offseason, which he has. You're not going to see him involved, obviously, in any of these OTAs. And then there will be a very important scan. And as a guy that has dealt with, you know, degenerative discs, as a guy that has spinal stenosis, as a guy whose, you know, career, if you want to even call it that, was cut short because, yeah, there's some back injuries and spinal cord risk and everything else, that will be a decision that one guy is going to make. One guy, not a doctor, not a neurosurgeon, not one other person other than a guy that wears a jersey number 31, and I would expect that decision some point in June.
All right, three things you need to know every day right at 7:10. Thank you to everybody in the text machine who reminded me it's a four-game series against Texas, so they can't win it tonight. Sorry about that. That's on me. And then a lot of texts about Felix, and it's interesting. I'll be curious when we dig into the calls a little bit deeper later whether they are the same as the text.
Because a lot like me. They're not going to call. I don't want to talk about this.
Well, the texters are pretty...
Yeah, the texters
are done.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
The texters are saying, I'm sick and tired. I've got three seasons now of Felix being hurt. He'll be better next year. That's enough. Can him now. Yeah. Only wins matter. The salary is paid no matter what. What gives you the best chance of winning? Not Felix. Move on. Mm. And maybe it's a little unfair to have some of those conversations the day after an annoying loss. But it is interesting to see some of that text. I'll be curious whether or not the phones kind of go in the same direction. In the meantime, some Seahawks news today. Good chance to talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, let's dig in because we got some Seahawks news. Looks like they're going to sign Brandon Marshall. What do you make of it?
I like it. I mean, I was hearing that at the initial part that they were not going to do it. Now I'm glad they've doubled back and decided to do it because, one, he's a big threat. I think he's an experienced guy that can give good leadership. I think that I like it personally because he grew up 5 miles away from where I grew up. I like that part of it. But I mean, what you're looking at is a guy that has had a borderline Hall of Fame career, and he comes here at a position that they need, a big, tall receiver, 6'5", 230 pounds. I think that could really help. I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to come in here and start, but I definitely think he can help.
I like all of that, John, and I'm with you. In a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, I'm right on that train. I just I find these practices, I find these reps so doggone valuable that I've got to discover everything in Amaro Daboll and Marcus Johnson and Jerron Brown and any of those other guys. It's a period of discovery for me, for this team in that position, rather than a 34 or 35-year-old guy. Convince me further that I'm wrong.
Well, I think when you still look at the five receivers that could make this team and you start to get the five and you start to see, okay, you got David Moore, you've got Tanner McElvoy, you've got, young receivers like Marcus Johnson and that, is that going to be good enough? And so if you add a guy like a Brandon Marshall, at least you know you have five good ones and you still have the ability to develop a Darbo. You still have the ability to see what you can have in Jerron Brown. And it just, because remember, it's an injury play game. And if you get one or two guys that get hurt, look how thin that list could be. So, I agree. This is supposed to be the time for discovery. But also, if you go back and you see that, they did bring in veterans in 2011 and brought them in. I mean, it's a low cost type of deal. I'm sure it's about $1.5 million as far as maybe even a little lower than that than the cap. So it's a gamble, but I think it's a good gamble.
Personality still volatile, John?
At times, yeah. I think that it's controlled now a little bit better, but it can go off. I think that you saw in his last year with the Jets that, he had problems with Sheldon Richardson and that carried through. But, he's really done a great job of cleaning a lot of that up.
All right, so what do we make of Cam Chancellor and his comments yesterday? He says he's ready to play.
Yeah,
if his body says he's ready to play, and if not, then he's not ready to play.
Yeah, just I think what we expect. I mean, right now the body's not saying that he's ready to play, and there's no urgency as far as a decision. I mean, you know what's going to be. He's going to make $6.8 million this year. He'll be on the physically unable to perform list until he can pass a physical and show that he can play. I think that it's good that he's been around helping some of the guys, trying to make sure that there's good leadership and all that stuff, but I still think the odds are that he's not going to be able to play.
This is really a perfect Clayton one, though. I mean, if you add your but also two in this, right? I mean, if my body says I can play, I'm playing, but also two, if my body says don't play, I'm not playing, I'm going to listen. Will he be ultimately, John, the one that makes that call?
Yeah, I would say so. I think the team would be involved in it too, because obviously they're not going to put him to risk. I mean, they weren't going to do that with Cliff Averill, and certainly they wouldn't do that with Cam Chancellor. Would it be interesting to see if he didn't have the guarantee, if they would have made an earlier decision or what they would do? But I think that they're concerned, because if you have a neck injury like that, I mean, it could have even lasting, even longer effects. But I don't know if they're willing to take the chance. But right now, there's no need to make a decision, because again, time's on the side of everybody. because he just needs to see if there's an outside chance. It'd be great if he can, but I don't think he can.
Yeah, it's got to. It's interesting because this. There was a time where it looked like maybe he would retire and the Seahawks would get some salary cap relief and this, that, and the other. Is that just out? Is that just not a possibility?
I don't know when that time was because, you know, he had the guarantee of $6.8 million. He has a guarantee of close to $4 million next year. So, you know, if he retires, he tends to have to pay back some of the proration on the signing bonus money, and I don't think he would want to do that. Business-wise, it's not the best thing for him to do. So,
can he retire and they let him keep that money? Is that possible? So that it comes off the salary cap but he gets to keep the money?
Yeah, that could possibly.
That's not a salary cap violation? That's not like, you know, paying Russell Wilson outside through Paul Allen's company? So why wouldn't they just do that? Why wouldn't they work out that settlement with him where he says, okay, look, you retire, so we get the salary cap relief. We'll give you your $6 million, and we all leave as friends, and you're in the ring of honor.
They wouldn't get the relief this year. That's where the problem would be.
They'd get it next year, right?
They get it next year,
yeah. Well, that's better than not getting it.
Well, I mean, they have all till...
They have all that time.
Yeah, they have 7 months right now to try to do that, so there's no reason to make a move like that now.
Hey, who's this guy, the Chiefs offensive lineman, ended up getting a medical school degree yesterday?
Isn't that amazing?
What's his name?
Lawrence Duvernay-Tardif.
Okay.
And it was funny because I remember seeing John Dorsey, you know, when he was the general manager of the Chiefs, and they had signed him to a contract extension of over $8 million a year. And I said, man, that's a lot of money because, you watch how the guard market's going to go. But in the meantime, you know, Lawrence is out there trying to get that degree, and he was working hard and spent 5 years being able to get it. I think it shows how smart he is. I mean, he's a very good offensive lineman. I mean, that's why he's paid 5 years over $40 million. And now you see that there's an extra perk in there that he can now be a doctor if you need him.
Well, I'll tell you, John, I really didn't know anything about the story. I just wanted to see if you could pronounce his name because I certainly couldn't. So I was testing you, and you passed with flying colors. Well, your reward, a wild card.
Oh.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
If you could pick one animal that you can control every one of in the entire world, which animal would you choose?
I think I would probably do a tiger because, you know, tiger can be ferocious. I mean, if you need the tiger to go and do some duties for you, I'd like to be able to control that. I mean, you want to make sure that the tiger doesn't do any kind of a problem in the area. So, I mean, because, again, you don't get the... I mean, over here in Renton, I don't think there's too many tigers you have to worry about.
I think they have a tiger-free policy.
Yeah, so I think I would take a tiger because it's just kind of a neat animal.
Interesting. Hey, does your database have any burner accounts on it, John?
I have zero burner account.
You follow zero burner.
No Jerry Colangelo. I don't have a Jerry Colangelo.
Brian Colangelo. Let's be clear.
Brian,
not Jerry.
Yeah. What? Say, yeah.
What do we?
Why,
make
now,
of
why
that?
Would you even have a burner or five burners?
I'll tell you what, we're going to talk more about the story in a few minutes. I've been thinking about Seattle sports burner accounts that I would like to see.
Yeah.
There's some good ones. We got some burner accounts that I think really need to be part of the Seattle sports.
But to answer your question, John, why? So you can hide.
So you can hide?
So you can reveal your anger without needing to actually have any responsibility.
So you can
for
deceive and lie and hide.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. All right. Bye, John.
Thank you.
All right. See you later. There's John Clayton with us every single day right at 7:15. Of course, you can hear him on the John Clayton Show at 10 o'clock and then with Danny David Moore at 4 o'clock later on today. I've been laughing about this for a few minutes. Just a quick aside. I don't know when else to say this, but I thought it was funny. You know who Ned Yost is?
Yeah.
He's the Kansas City Royals manager. So I guess last night they ended up having some sort of rain delay. And this is the quote from Ned. Ned said he was unaware storms were approaching in the 14th inning. I didn't have any idea, he said. I heard somebody say, if we don't score this inning, we're going to be here until 5 in the morning. And I just figured they were talking about our offense. That is really funny. That was good.
Pretty good.
Not the Mariners last night.
No.
But still pretty funny. All right. Burner accounts are the rage, Brock.
Yeah.
They are the rage. I just went outside and I saw Tom Tangney, who is not on Twitter. He's a news guy from Cairo. Tom is not on Twitter, so he did not have any clue what I was talking about. He is a giant NBA fan. I mean, like, every day I walk by him, all he wants to do is talk to me about the NBA, the playoffs, even during the regular season. All Tom wants to do is talk about the NBA. And as of this morning, because he's not on Twitter, he had no idea about the single biggest story in sports this morning. The next Manti Te'o case is here, and it's next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Oh, this story's nuts. Honestly, I would say Manti Te'o-esque, if you remember Manti Te'o and his fake girlfriend that he got catfished by. This is the story about Brian Colangelo, Brock, who is the 76ers president of basketball operations, the guy who has asked his fans to trust him and trust the process, right? Over all these years, no one has asked really more of their fans in terms of trust than the Sixers have. Trust the process.
He didn't really originate that, though.
No, but he's the guy who has been in charge of it for the last few years, right? Of trusting the process. And it's finally starting to pay some dividends as they are a good team. They were good this year and look to be even better next year.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
second round of the playoffs and hope on the horizon.
Unfortunately, The Ringer posted an article yesterday that seems to prove pretty convincingly that Brian Colangelo, the president of the Sixers, had a bunch of different Twitter accounts that were supposedly anonymous, not linked to him, except it looks like he was running all of them, five of them to be exact. They're called burner accounts. And it looks like he was using those accounts to disseminate misinformation about either his own players or sometimes real information, including medical records about his own players, to talk trash to former employees and people who've held the job before him. And to pump up himself through these groups of Twitter accounts. And I'm not going to go through all the details of how they caught him. You can go read it. Just Google it. It's a pretty interesting story. But what the heck? This is now a thing? It is one of the most, I think, bizarre, amazing, and in some ways unsurprising stories that's happened. Not specifically with him, but I am not surprised that this eventually happened.
Sure. And, Mike, I mean, to be fair, there's going to be lots of members in the media. In this building that have burner accounts. They get so enraged and so wrapped up emotionally that, it's their way and their chance to fire back, to state their case. I think of Houston Nutt. There's like three things that popped to my mind immediately. And I know you want to shift gears to some.
No, I think there's some real conversation.
But there's like three stories that just, and one of them was 10 hours ago. One of them was 15 years ago. And one of them was about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And the one 5 years ago is Houston Nutt. Okay, the old Ole Miss coach who tracked down my cell phone, who called me after a broadcast that I had done, and he had said, "You know what? I didn't watch the broadcast."
You got to do it in Houston Nutt's accent.
But mom was real upset. Mom was real upset.
That's impossible to understand.
I don't really like when mom get real upset now. Okay, mom was upset, but what said on that broadcast last night? So you got to talk to me about it. And I'm like, okay, so what's going on? He's like, well, I got to get my voice said, man. How do I get my voice out? How do I get my voice out there? Because what was said was wrong. It was just wrong, Brock. It just wasn't the way it was. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And what he was talking about was stuff on the broadcast that was information disseminated by the current coaching staff that he felt painted him and his staff in a very bad light. So he wanted his voice out. You know what? And that's what these burner accounts try to do. That's what people try to do. And not just in the media, not just coaches, everybody. Like, let me create a fake account so I can get my side of the story out without being necessarily attributed
to me. Head football coach, the Ole Miss Rebel.
Right? That's number one. Number two is Tom Moore, 15 years ago, when he would sit in our little QB meeting like, yep, the game got him. Game got him, Brock. And he'd read stories in the press about people just – in this one, I guarantee you, he's reading it somewhere down in Arizona, retired now, like, yep. The whole game got Mr. Colangelo. Hmm. You got so caught up emotionally that the game broke you.
Those are the only two stories you think of?
And then last night, Titus.
Oh.
On the bench after a very emotional loss. And I said, Titus, it's really important that everything you're feeling stays right in your gut. You don't ever want your opponent to know they got you. And when you break down emotionally on the field, they got you. Don't let the game get you.
I'm surprised.
Got Mr. Colangelo.
I'm surprised.
You got sucked in, you got caught up, and you got broke.
I'm surprised those are the only stories that jumped out to you and not this one.
I've known Brock a long time.
Did you have any reaction to that?
To what Brock Huard says?
Yeah.
What? I would put very little stock in what Brock Huard has to say about anything that has to do with
that one doesn't jump out to you?
That wasn't a burner account. I got burned. As the youth say, burn. That was just a burn. Now, if I wanted to create a burner account.
Just a guy who the game got a little too much for?
Oh, sure. Sure, the game got him.
I'm not saying we're talking burner accounts. I think the reason people create burner accounts is they don't end up like Jim Mora. Because he's not the only one with a personality like this, but he's the only one who just goes out and says it by himself. At least Brian Colangelo had the decency to create a burner account.
I think it's ludicrous that anyone would question Josh Rosen's toughness when they don't know the nature of his injury. So, in all fairness to my comment, for a broadcaster who knows zippo about what's going on down there to question the toughness of Josh Rosen like, I don't know. I guess it drives ratings. I don't know.
It drives ratings. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. Jim Mora and his response and the ridiculousness of it is why people create burner accounts.
It is.
Because of the insecurity and then ultimately the anger and frustration with not being able to respond.
Yep.
And in some cases, their inability to respond well.
Yeah.
Or the fact that if they respond, it creates a story. And Jim Mora certainly has found that out over and over again. Does he learn his lesson? No. This will happen again if he's ever in a position of power. But Brian Colangelo tried to do it a different way.
Yep.
He has the same, I'm guessing, same level of frustration and anger as Jim Mora. And so this is how he chose
to he got dumped on for years and years and years and years in Philly. What an idiot. This is what a jackal. This is going the wrong way. There's no process. And
he wanted
to try to lash back.
But this
back.
Went beyond that. Because once you start out putting out like the personal information of your players and stuff, that is truly absurd. There's a great tweet from Aaron Ward, who used to play in the NHL, he's now a commentator, who said, "I remember the good old days before burner accounts when the GMs and coaches just told your own team's play-by-play and color analyst why you stunk, and then you heard about it during the next game's broadcast."
Truth.
That's the good old days. So I started thinking, which Seattle personalities, sports personalities, would you like to see have a burner account? And what would they do with those burner accounts?
I know only
one. And we'll certainly take tax, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. My first one would be an Ichiro burner account, where he only tweets in English and just trolls everybody who's mad that Ichiro only speaks Japanese. It's just Ichiro only tweeting in English, in perfect English, about nothing. You know, just about random stuff. He doesn't say anything mean.
Right.
He just sort of, like, tweets stuff in English.
Would it be gothic Ichiro?
No, not Ichimo.
No.
Just actual Ichiro tweeting things in English.
It wasn't gothic, Brock. He was emo.
Yeah, it's a big difference between goth and emo.
My bad.
If you've watched South Park, you know. How about a Doug Baldwin account? Happy Doug Baldwin. He gives you some of the happy things going on that day.
Oh, happy. I think there probably is a Doug Baldwin account where he just says a bunch of stuff about Russell Wilson.
That's the other one I was thinking about. Just a Doug Baldwin burner where he tweets out like the all 22 copy
supposed
of a
play. To be read right to left. It was read left to right. I know this for a fact.
I like the other Doug Baldwin account.
I like the Brock Huard burner account that's just supporting Russell Wilson, just constantly tweeting support for Russell.
That's just Brock's account. What are you talking about? That's just at Brock ESPN.
He has 15 other accounts he likes all of his tweets to drive more SEO.
How about a Jerry DePoto account that does nothing?
Yeah.
It's inactive. It's the complete opposite of Jerry DePoto. It's totally inactive. It does nothing. Are you into that one?
Possibly.
All right.
Do you think how many of these GMs have burner accounts?
I bet you a lot.
I mean, that was DePoto's.
A lot of coaches, managers, and GMs have accounts that they read with and don't tweet.
Yeah, that was Colangelo's defense. And by the way, even a Stephen A. Smith, Philadelphia guy through and through, says, "Hey, can we give this just a little bit of time?
Yeah.
Right before we just totally bury one guy.
Do we have to?
Because Colangelo, no, we don't have to. But Colangelo is going to say, hey, there's 30 other dudes, 29 others, that have the same thing, burner accounts, that just, you know, want to read about our teammates and want to see what's going on in the industry, that do a whole lot of listening more than, you know, spouting stuff off. And if any of this is true, he's done.
Yeah, he's done. I mean, they're already starting an investigation. My guess is he will be out within a couple of days. I don't think this is going to take an awful lot of time.
I'd like to see a Lydia burner account.
Where her actual negativity comes out.
Yeah. She just tweets all sorts of things that she hates all day long.
Rage. I hate this. I hate that. She won't even allow that. She just says mean things to everyone everywhere she goes. How about a Russell?
That makes me so uncomfortable.
How about a Russell Wilson burner account that tweets angry messages at the scouts and GMs who think he's too short? Like every time he ends up coming in like 80th in one of these, best players in the NFL poll, and somebody's like, I just don't know. He's too obsessed with leaving the pocket. And I don't think a guy that short can throw from the pocket.
Hashtag a lot of time to sleep.
Right.
So much time to sleep.
Thank you, Lydia. I knew you'd join the party eventually. All right. If you've got more ideas, you can text them in 710-710. Powered by Coors Light. But just saying a Bob Stelton burner account's not enough. You've got to say what it would do. Like, I like your text, 425, but what would Bob's burner account say?
Rage. Right?
How about
rage.
I like this one, a Cussle burner account. It's where Russell cusses. It's the other side of Russell's personality. All right, those are some good options. Coors Light's Blue 42 is next. The Seahawks have themselves a new big and big-name receiver. How are they going to use him? Brock's got answers. Coming up next, I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready? Right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
How about a Russell Wilson burner account? Mr. Limited. It's not nearly as unlimited. A Salk burner account tweeting nothing but adoration for Howdy. I think that would be a Howdy account. As me tweeting adoration.
How, you really don't have Howdy. A burner account, seriously?
You must. You are the big... You yes. Of everyone I know, you're the person yep. who would have a burner yeah. account.
I'm a pretty big snoop.
What does that mean?
I like to snoop things, for sure.
Yeah, so you've got
snooping
a burner.
Around.
Yeah, he's got
you have one, right? Well, there's no way. What's yours? At Howdy ESPN?
Yeah, at Boy Howdy ESPN.
At Boy Howdy ESPN. There's no way that's your only Twitter account.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to tell you which ones are my.
I didn't ask, but you have more than that, right?
I don't want to like admit that.
But you do.
I wouldn't. Why would I admit that?
Why? Why not?
I mean, I'm just going to not say anything about whether I have one or not.
All right, fine. Sounds good. But I believe that you do. Just as long as we're clear, I believe that you have at least one.
Yeah, if we were to make a list of the, I don't know, how many employees are there in the ESPN
he'd
side?
He'd be one on my list.
I think he'd be right now.
At Lydia Booz is my favorite tweet that we got. At Lydia Booz. That's a pretty good. That's a pretty good one. All right, we're going to get back to Felix Hernandez coming up here in about 15 minutes. Brock will take some calls on that as well. Let's do three football questions first. Coors Light's Blue 42. Earl Thomas came in 42nd in the NFL Network Top 100 poll. Yeah. Is that about where he should be?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's one of the top 50 players in this league. I don't think you can get beyond one hand as far as, you know, guys in the secondary that still really impact the game. You know, I'm anxious to go out there and watch today. And I know that's one of our questions here. A little spoiler alert of the things that I'm going to be looking for. And, you know, I love what Daniel Jeremiah says. You know, that what and why he always goes back and studies the NFL guys after he's done with the scouts. He wants to see the real thing. He doesn't want to see counterfeits. He wants to see the real thing. And I think the real thing in that tape of Earl last year still shows an unbelievable twitch. That his ability to get up and go from, you know, from that center field spot to the numbers, to go from center field. I mean, I said it during the broadcast, the one game I did on radio last year with Rabel. You know, the Rams threw a little bubble screen. It was a third down and three. And I was like, uh-oh. You know, you could just see the chasm opening, right? The little alley there. And all of a sudden, whoa, where did that guy come from? How does Earl close that territory and make that play? As long as the speed and the burst are still there, Mike, he's one of the 50 best players in the game. His peers recognize him as number 42. I think that's a fair number.
All right, question number two. Sounds like the Seahawks will sign Brandon Marshall, longtime veteran receiver, big guy, who, by the way, has never played in a playoff game in his career. That's crazy. Considering how long and successful a career he's had, how would you use Brandon Marshall?
I think the obvious is I would use him in the red zone scoring touchdowns. And we actually saw it a couple years ago in a year that was a fantastic year. I mean, his grades in with the Jets, especially in 15, were still excellent. And we remember he went toe-to-toe with a certain guy that wore number 25.
Fitzpatrick is going to throw to the end zone. He's got his man and hit the touchdown catch by Brandon Marshall. Richard Sherman was there. But Marshall turns around, and Richard didn't get his head around to find the ball. It's a 17-yard touchdown.
Now, Mr. Sherman came back and got him. Got him a couple more times in that game. Picked off Fitzpatrick later in that game. But that's why he's here. He's here to leverage that big body and understands how to do it. Unlike an Amara Darbo that is still a pup trying to learn how to do that at the NFL level against elite corners. How do I truly gain separation? How do I truly leverage? And when I think of it honestly, before Brandon Marshall, the name that has to come to mind is Michael Irvin. Mm. Michael Irvin, late in his career, was a guy that ran 4.75. But he had such an ability in every little nuance there is. So, you know, as much as I complain about him taking reps away, maybe there's something to be said in that wide receiver room for Amaro, for Jerron, for Marcus. Like, hey, this is how I do it, man. This is how you get away with this.
He seems like he's become that later in his career. I mean, that's a guy with a lot of issues early in his career.
That would be the most convincing argument is if they were to say to me, you want to counteract your problem with taking away reps? Because it's a big problem for me. You're taking away reps and upside and opportunity for others. You counteract that by this guy actually being a legitimate teacher, actually being in that receiver room where there's a new receiver coach, being on the field with those guys, instructing as we saw Sherman do to a Shaquille. That would counteract. That'd be the biggest positive. And, yeah, he's going to be a red zone
player. All right, real quick, question number three. Brock, you didn't get a chance to get out there to practice with us last week on Thursday, which is a lot of fun. But you'll be out there today, a little open practice to the media. What will you be watching for?
Yeah, there's going to be four things I'm going to be looking for specifically. Tyler Lockett and his explosion. It started to come back at the end of last year. We saw him at the draft party. He looked phenomenal. I want to see his explosiveness. I want to see the running backs catching the ball. That is going to be a strength that this group has had for Russell Wilson that no group has had in 7 years for him. That's Procise. That's Chris Carson. That's the rookie Penny. All those guys can catch. I want to see that. I want to see that ability, especially against some of the defense and one-on-one situations. I want to see the speed of the rookies in that secondary. You know, I want to see those guys. And, you know, it's the number one thing, the most obvious thing for any scout that jumps out. How do these young guys play? How fast do they play? Or how much are they thinking and slowing down? And then lastly, and most importantly, I want to see Shoddy coaching Russ. I want to see that dynamic. I want to feel that dynamic. I want to watch Russell's anticipation. Some new systems, right? Some new plays, some new opportunities with Schottenheimer's system coming in. How much anticipation does he play with, and how hard is he being coached? There's four or five things I'll be taking notes on and getting back to you all tomorrow.
That is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. I think it's adorable that you think that's where your eyes are going to be. They will be on the little crease between Chris Carson's shoulder and his tricep.
Mm.
I think it's adorable that you think you won't just be looking at their bodies, yeah. But I think we all
between
know
the horseshoe and that deltoid just bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much
pretty jacked.
That's where my eyes were on Thursday.
More jacked
when I was
than Turbo,
out there.
Though? Turbo was jacked.
He's bigger and and he's better. Like, everything about him is not just his biceps, which yep. Turbo had.
Yeah.
He kind of has the complete package going on, man.
He's kind of hyped and jacked.
Yes, exactly. Much like Stacy was the other day. Sheesh. All right. Let's do this. Let's open up these lines. 206-421-3776. Felix Hernandez is a mystery to me. He's a bit of an enigma. What would you do with him? He's got this year and then next year remaining on his contract. So you got about $28 million next year and just over $14, $15 million left on this year's contract. What would you do with Felix Hernandez? Is this salvageable? Can you get him back to being a worthwhile guy in your rotation every 5 days? At some point, do you want to move on? Do you skip him in the rotation? How do you get his attention if you do think that there's something salvageable, but maybe he's not getting it? What would you do if you were Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais? 206-421-3776. We'll give you some of our take and get yours as well next. I'm Brock and Salk.